As you drive into New Jersey, you'll see signs of various kinds welcoming you to the Garden State or welcoming you to New Jersey. The wording varies, but you get the idea. It's kind of an odd outstretching of welcoming arms when you consider how the cost of housing in New Jersey makes it challenging, say the least, for people to even stay in the state. Recently, the state of New Jersey issued very precise affordable housing mandates with specific numbers that each community has to achieve by the end of June of 2025. As you can imagine, there are communities who have challenged this policy in a variety of ways, which include court actions. My first guest today is here to explain why this affordable housing mandate is indeed needed and has to be a mandate. She is the president and CEO of the Housing and Community Development Network of New Jersey. Stacey Berger, how are you today, Stacey?
I'm well, Chris. Thanks so much for having me.
And to find out about this issue and affordable housing in New Jersey, all the work and the focus of the Housing Community Development Network of New Jersey, their website, which we have on our homepage as well, hcdnnj.org. Now, Stacey, when you look at, and these are this is the state information I'm going with here. When you look at the report, along with giving out numbers for each and every community, there's a couple of small towns, for example, Walpack, which has a population of four. So we're not going to put affordable housing mandates on a community like that. But along with the mandate, the state backs this up with facts that present the need and probably more importantly, the ability for these communities to come through with the numbers they're being called for. Talk about what the mechanics of this report really are focusing on.
Well, first of all, I want to just take a half a step back and let folks know that the decisions about these numbers are due next year, the final decisions, but we're not expecting that every community is going to actually comply with these numbers by next year. It's a 10-year period. So we've actually been in what housing professionals call the third round of our fair housing rules for almost 20 years, where we have been working with municipalities to make sure that they meet their fair housing responsibilities. They have an obligation to provide a reasonable opportunity for developers and people who live in their neighborhoods to make sure those houses get built. It is not that the town itself has to build them, or that the exact number has to be met by next year. It's that the town has to come up with a plan for how they're going to meet the number that the state has indicated they are responsible for allowing to be built in their community. So some towns may decide that they want to build those homes in partnership with a nonprofit developer, or maybe they have their own housing agency that they work with internally. There's a lot of choices and a lot of ways for towns to meet those responsibilities, but it's really a plan for how they're going to do that and not actually having those homes all built by next year. Although the need here in New Jersey is so great that it would be wonderful if those towns who have not, especially those towns who have not been compliant with their Mount Laurel obligation, did get shovels in the ground sooner rather than later. So I just wanted to clarify that for your listeners. We know that New Jersey is one of the highest most expensive places to rent an apartment or to buy a home. And we see it every day here at our network of 270 or so nonprofit community organizations, housing developers, and housing advocates, as well as private sector lenders and government entities that are working together to make sure that that need gets met. We know that during the pandemic, people experienced housing insecurity at much higher rates than ever before, in large part because so many people faced economic impacts of the pandemic as well as the health impacts of the pandemic. And we told people to keep each other safe, they needed to stay home. And a lot of folks did that, and now they can't afford the home they were in because they're facing eviction or foreclosure because those moratoriums that were in place during the pandemic have been lifted. And some folks are seeing 18, 20, 25% rate increases in their rent. And that just puts New Jersey out of reach for so many people. We actually have had our population increase. I know that folks hear that there's a lot of people moving out, but there are a lot of people moving in. And that's part of why our housing market is so tight, because we just have a very low vacancy rate, because it's a popular place to live, because New Jersey is wonderful. And we want to make sure that everyone can afford to live here.
Yeah, to live in a state comfortably and call it a home as opposed to a temporary home until we can't afford it anymore. It's a great way to long-term plan for a population that pays taxes, by the way, so for state politicians, there's the incentive for your side of the equation. And I saw the number, total homes over the next decade, and thank you for getting my misspeak out and correcting it. But the number I saw was over the decade, 146,000 total residences. That's not that's not a lot when you think about that. We're talking the entire state here.
It is not that much when you think about it. It's really the minimum we need to do to make sure that we're meeting the need that people have in our communities. And every community has a responsibility, so we share that among each other, and we support each other to get those homes on the built and happening, because people need a place to live. Just yesterday, I had a call from someone who's got somebody in their family, living in their car, and people are living under bridges, or they're sleeping in unsafe places, or they're doubled or tripled up in apartments that are too small because there's so many people there. We need to do a better job of making sure that there's a variety of housing choices for our residents that they can afford in places that they want to live, that have great community services and access to transportation, so that we can take cars off the road, have less of a climate footprint, and do something about the climate change impacts that we're seeing, where it's, doesn't rain for 45 days and then it drops a foot of snow. These are all things that are connected to each other. If we can build more homes where people already live and work, and create homes in communities of opportunity, so that we're spreading out the housing across the state, we're going to be better positioned for the economic well-being of our future.
For the information edification for the person listening right now, you mentioned the Mount Laurel decision. Talk about what that was set out to put down as a foundation, and why is the affordable housing problem still existing with that Mount Laurel decision in existence still?
So two parts of that. It's a great question, Chris. The Mount Laurel decisions are about 45 years of case law in New Jersey that uphold our constitutional language that says that everybody should have the opportunity to live in a community where they want to live, and that really it is an economic and secondarily, but not completely, a racial segregation issue. And Mount Laurel, the cases are named for that town because the case was originally brought by the NAACP of Mount Laurel against the local government, which refused to provide zoning to create garden apartments that the NAACP, led by an active member of the community, Ethel Lawrence, to put garden apartments in that community. And the mayor at the time told Ms. Lawrence that if she didn't like the fact that they wouldn't do that kind of zoning for small multifamily garden apartments, that she should just move somewhere else. And that's not how we operate in New Jersey. And so that went to court, and it's been enforced and reiterated by the courts many, many times that communities have a responsibility to use their zoning in a way that is not exclusive. So you can't use your zoning rules to keep people out. That is the basis and the underpinning of all of this. So you have to create a different set of zoning rules that allow for the development of affordable homes for people at low and moderate income. So 80% of the area median income, which varies by region and family size. And so that whole set of formulas that we have used for a very long time in New Jersey came under attack in the middle of the 2000. And Chris Christie, when he was governor, took $1 billion over the course of his tenure as governor out of our affordable housing trust fund, which folks used to build and create those homes. So we still had the responsibility, but there wasn't any funding for it. And so that funding has started to come back under the Murphy administration. We are very grateful that that has not been a place that the administration has taken money from, but instead they have continued to put more funds both into the Affordable Housing Trust Fund, but also into affordable housing production and other programs that can help create the homes that people need. And that drain for a decade where we didn't have an enforceable Council on Affordable Housing mandate, where Governor Christie gutted that council, where towns did not comply if they didn't want to, and where there was no money, has really created the tightening of that market where we have not had the resources or the ability to build the homes that people need. At the same time, we saw the economic collapse, we saw the Great Recession and the foreclosure crisis, so there has been a lot of pressure on the housing market in New Jersey at the very time that we didn't have the resources as a sector and an industry to meet those needs. people did what they could, and they did great work to try to keep people safely and stably housed, especially during the pandemic. But we are starting to see the spigot come back on right now, and we are excited at the prospect of being able to build these homes for folks who need them so that they can work and thrive in the communities they want to live in.
No, that also,
everybody deserves that.
Absolutely. That all explains, too, why the last time we had any housing obligations set by the city, you have to go all the way back to 1999 to find that
correct
action. We're talking with Stacy Berger, President, CEO of the Housing and Community Development Network of New Jersey, hcdnnj.org, their website. And you are listening to Issues and Ideas. Your organization also does a report yearly, Out of Reach, which is an appropriate title because, well, just a fast stat for the person listening, depending on the county in New Jersey, you would need at a minimum wage rate, which we've talked about here on the show before, that should not be a career wage, but if that's the best you could do, that's the best you could do, and the state's done significant work in bringing that number up. But that being said,
correct,
depending on the county, you would need between 2 to 3 minimum wage full-time jobs to comfortably afford just simply living expenses, housing expenses in New Jersey. That's to say that's improbable is generous. Impossible, yeah.
There's actually nowhere in the country, there is no county in the United States of America where a person earning minimum wage can work one job and afford a 2-bedroom apartment for themselves. And that is the state of America and our housing industry in 2024. The National Low Income Housing Coalition puts out of reach, and we are the state partner, and we release that data every year with them. We have actually become slightly more affordable over the last 3 or 4 years as the state has really stepped up and helped the nonprofit sector and developers in general build the homes that people need with these extra resources I just talked about. But it is simply true that the rent is too damn high, and it's something that the state legislature, we believe, needs to look at immediately. One thing that we can do is reduce the overall cost of eviction for tenants, the impact of eviction. Right now in New Jersey, it only costs $50 for a landlord to file an eviction, and that is one of the lowest eviction filing fees in the country. So we think we need to raise that fee to keep people in their homes because it will be a disincentive for landlords to evict people. And if we are able to stabilize the eviction crisis, we can get to the root cause of rent being out of control, which is really corporate greed. We have a lot of corporate landlords in New Jersey who are just trying to use those developments to, you know, make a profit. And there's a point at which that profit becomes predatory in some sense, right? Where people are being evicted from their homes after they've had a rent increase that is just unconscionable is actually the standard in New Jersey. There is a legal limit to what a tenant should be expected to pay in terms of a rent increase, and the legal term is unconscionable, but there's no number associated with that. So we would like to see the legislature address that by setting a standard for what is unconscionable. Is 10% a 10% rent increase unconscionable? We think so. It could be much closer to the cost of living. We're not saying that, you know, landlords can't ever raise the rent, but it is so out of control in New Jersey that we really need to start thinking about housing as a function, as a human right and a necessity that the state needs to step in when things are just completely out of whack and the private sector is just taking advantage of people. And so that's part of how we address that, and is to just keep the rent at a reasonable rate.
Wrapping up here with this idea, let's bring the landlord side into the equation, too. We all know property taxes in New Jersey are among the highest, if not the highest, in the nation. Is that an issue that, if addressed, could also alleviate the affordable housing problem? If it costs less to be an owner, then the owner, ethically at least, should be charging less.
Well, that's correct. Landlords often pass on the property taxes to their tenants. So it's not accurate when people think that tenants don't pay property taxes. They often pay property taxes. They are also eligible for Anchor and other property tax relief programs, which are great that we have that as an option. And we encourage people to take advantage of that and to apply for those property tax relief programs. We are not seeing landlords say that it is too expensive to do business here. We are seeing them build huge, you know, in a lot of cases, just straight up luxury apartments with no affordable units set aside. And so we really think that the property taxes are absolutely an issue. We also, in a lot of ways, get what we pay for. We have great schools. We have roads that need some improvement. We have transit, obviously, that needs to be addressed. But property taxes are not the main thing that is driving our housing costs. It is really the profit margin that we are seeing. And also, you know, the interest rates that have gone up over the last 2 years have caused housing prices to go up as well. And we know that New Jersey is one of the most racially segregated states in the country. Even though we're very diverse, which is something we should be enormously proud of, we still have a legacy of segregation and institutional racism, which has played out in our housing market, where almost 80% of white residents in New Jersey own their home. And the reverse is true for people of color, where most folks of color do not own their home. And so getting the banking industry in particular to make loans and highlight their Community Reinvestment Act mortgages, which are great products for people who are either first-time or first-generation homeowners, is really important. The state also has a program, and we think we can leverage those private sector investments to make sure that we're giving first-time homeownership opportunities to people so that they can build generational wealth in the neighborhoods and communities of their choice.
Comes down to an issue of fairness for you listening, and asking for fairness, I don't think is an obscene idea. Hopefully you don't either. So spend some time over the website for the Housing Community Development Network of New Jersey, hcdnnj.org, and spend some time looking at their out-of-reach report, because that's where you'll see the numbers that give rise to the concern about what the issue of affordable housing is currently all about and what it needs to be to be a fair opportunity, as I said, for people who want to have a roof over their head and be a part of a state, local community as well as a state community here in New Jersey. Again, it's hcdnnj.org. We have that link at the homepage as well. We've been talking with the president and CEO of the Housing Community Development Network of New Jersey, Stacy Berger. Stacy, thank you so much for the education, bringing about understanding, because a lot of voices like to make things convoluted, or the NIMBY philosophy comes into play with the 21 towns that I referenced before about taking court action against this idea. The facts always rise to the top, and you're helping that happen. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks so much for having me. It really is a question of fairness. I think that's a really great way for people to think about this. Housing is a human right. Everybody deserves a safe, affordable place to live. That's what the goal here is to make sure that people can be part of their community and have a safe place to work, live, and play. And we think that that is more than fair for everyone to aspire to, and that we have an obligation to help each other get there. So thanks for doing this. Appreciate it.